Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Okay, Bill Owens, I'll start throwing them at you, and you react to them, take a minute or so with them. Immigration reform.
I think it has some chance of being acted on over the next couple of months. There's a bill on the House floor now that very much mirrors the Senate. It's not exactly. There's probably 190 co-sponsors of that, almost all Democrats.
Once again, if there were an open vote, you think the chances of passage would be pretty good because the Republicans, they'd get some Republicans with them, as they did to end the standoff.
That's less clear to me at this point. That's actually less clear. That's not one of those bills that I could say with any clarity that I felt that that's what the outcome would be.
What are the Republicans worried about? I mean, you know, we saw what happened in the presidential election. Hispanics came wildly out for Obama. Don't they understand the game is up?
Well, I think some do. But again, whether or not they're prepared to move that because of the tremendous pressure about the southern border that really overtakes every conversation in Washington about immigration.
Mm-hmm.
Completely overtakes it.
But it's perception. We now know that there are more people going back to Mexico than coming this way. Nevertheless, you know, if it's going to lose your vote, you got to be careful.
That's right. And from my perspective, and from the perspective of my district, it's particularly harmful because it takes away legitimate focus from the northern border, where we're interested in increasing the movement of people and goods.
And do you think that your constituents feel the same way you do about that?
I think many do. I wouldn't say 100%, but I bet you the number is in the 60-65%.
Well, it makes me ask you a question. Do you ever poll on this stuff, or is it just too expensive?
I don't poll on a regular basis. We don't poll till we get into the
election,
you know, into the election year.
Yeah. Okay. So let's move from immigration to the farm bill, which is so important to so many of your constituents.
Well, that we actually have some good news on that I'm very happy about, and that is the House finally appointed conferees last week, and that moves this now to an actual conference. I think it increases the chances of us getting a farm bill this year or included in whatever settlement we get on January 15th or February 7th. They may want to hold the farm bill back to take whatever savings is coming from the farm bill to include it in a bigger deal, but I think now we actually have a chance of getting this done.
Who's getting blamed for the holdup? Is it the Republicans or the Democrats?
I would say in large measure it's the Republicans, because Mr. Boehner and Mr. Cantor didn't appoint conferees after the Senate did on August the 1st for almost 65 days?
Now, do farmers understand that kind of complex politics?
Absolutely.
Because I know most people don't. You know.
The farmers are very educated on these issues, are very nuanced on what is happening. The Farm Bureau helps them in that respect. So we're in a situation where the farmers are really quite aware of what's going on here and are very frustrated in the main.
Are we spending too much money in government?
Yes.
So on that, there's some agreement between Democrats and some Republicans, right?
The answer to that is I believe that almost everyone, Democrat or Republican, believes that. The question is, where do you cut? And so a great example of that is the Farm Bill and the SNAP program. Republicans in the House want to cut it $40 billion. Democrats in the Senate want to cut it about $4 billion. Where's the sweet spot? It's probably a little north of the $4 billion, but it's certainly nothing like $40 billion. That's completely over the top and is punitive in nature and doesn't really reflect the benefit that that program gives to many people in their communities.
So what is it that would mobilize the poor in this country to get politically active? It's a profound question, I know, but because Politicians always talk about the working poor, the middle class. You never hear about the poor, the people who get the SNAP, who don't go out, who don't politically organize. How would that ever happen?
You know, that is a profound question to which I don't have a good answer.
I mean, you get 40 million people who are going to be put on the rolls through the president's program. They're great beneficiaries. You have the Republicans coming out and saying, we don't want this. And there doesn't seem to be any march on Washington. You know, 40 million people, that's a lot of people. And if every one of them voted, I don't think the outcome of most elections would be in doubt.
I agree with you. However, that does not appear historically to have ever happened.
That's right.
And so what would motivate people is very difficult for me to get my arms around. I haven't read any studies that would tell you how that would happen, what would drive people to become motivated and active, at least in large numbers. Clearly, there are strong, strong groups of people in every socioeconomic category who are active politically. No doubt about that. But there is not a mass movement amongst the folks who fit into the groups that would benefit from health care and SNAP.
Now, you have a president who started his career as a community organizer, precisely what we're talking about, saying, okay, I want to organize the poor, I want to politically motivate them. Do you change when you become the president?
I think you do, because you have a much broader constituency. Mm-hmm. And you have to make sure that you are handling the problems of everyone.
Okay, I accept that without question. But you get a Senator Gillibrand. She represented a constituency, as you say, a small constituency as a congresswoman. She was opposed to a whole bunch of stuff. She's standing next to Chuck Schumer. They asked Schumer, how can you be, you know, for guns and for this and that? And he said, she'll develop. And indeed, she did when she became a senator. Doesn't that sort of smell of opportunism?
Well, you know, I think everyone is faced with choices in education. And one of the things I think this job entails is making sure you understand what it is your constituents want. And you have to look at what the majority of those are. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if she's in a small district that's very pro-gun, I can understand that position. If she's in the larger state environment where that group may be tremendously diluted.
Or even on gays, for example. I mean, same sort of thing.
People do evolve and change.
Evolve.
Right. I can tell you that from my experience doing this job, I have learned an enormous amount and have seen many things that I thought were black and white go to very light gray.
Gotcha. Well, Bill Owens, I can't tell you how appreciative we are, not only of your showing up on a regular basis and talking with us, but also with the fact that you're willing to engage in some of these discussions a little bit below what we usually hear in terms of soundbites. So I thank you very much for doing
that. Thanks, Alan. Take care.